I don't think it means it's like never use cis to describe yourself. You know?
I might go that far. Really? To be honest. Yeah.
Well, because I think, for instance,
if I'm talking about my access to privilege, I'm going to acknowledge I have privilege as a cisgender person.
Sure.
Right.
If you're happy with the same old ways of dating,
if you enjoy sucking at communication,
and you have no desire to improve your romantic life, then our podcast might not be for you.
But if you want some out-of-the-box ideas to deepen your current relationships,
broaden your sexual horizons,
develop a better understanding of yourself,
or learn more about non-monogamy,
then you've come to the right place. I'm Jace.
I'm Emily.
And I'm Dedeker.
And this is the Multiamory Podcast. On this episode of the Multiamory Podcast, we're talking about labels. Wait, we're millennials. We don't do labels.
You're almost not a millennial.
I'm almost not a millennial. No, labels, they're like frenemies or like the Force. There's a dark side and a light side to them. And there is a ton of way to use labels for evil or for good. But today we are going to be talking about the holy trinity of labeling, which is labeling our sexuality, labeling our genders, and labeling our relationship styles.
Holy trinity.
Did you just say the holy trinity?
I sure did.
You've been really getting way too into Jesus and stuff, and we're not even there yet on drunk Bible study.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I would call these three sections of one's identity the holy trinity, because there's many, many ways and many, many labels that you can apply to many different facets of yourself.
Holy trinity about these because these are the ones I feel like are debated a lot.
I will say
at work the other day, we did have a very long debate at lunch about the difference between a nerd and a geek.
Yeah,
so yes,
what
but
is the
most
difference?
Of the time though, people have more serious arguments and discussions about these sorts of labels than those sorts of labels.
I declared myself the only nerd at work today because I was the only one who watched Game of Thrones. Everyone else was like, and I'm like, who are you people? This is a cultural freaking phenomenon right now.
Okay. I would take umbrage with that, and I would argue that means that's not a good enough basis to call you a nerd, because it is a cultural phenomenon.
Okay, be that as it may,
I would still call you a nerd because
you are
into video games and nerdy stuff.
Yes, many nerdy things.
Uh-huh.
I'm glad.
But anyway, this was about the difference between nerd and geek.
Yes.
And that's the thing, actually. We did find some science behind it, which was kind of cool.
Well, what's the difference?
Well, see, it's going to spark a whole thing.
All right,
but
fine.
I mean, people, y'all can go discuss it in the Patreon group. But basically, the essence of the distinction is that a nerd is about essentially like learning about a thing that you're into,
mm-hmm.
whereas a geek is about doing the thing that you're into.
Okay, and where does the science come in?
The science was actually done based off of just analyzing how those words are used in social media, like collecting examples of them and then tabulating and making
actual usage. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Would reading count? Like, because you're learning about something?
It would be like
you're learning about Tolkien or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, it's all, you know, again, it's based on how they're used, but the idea being like, what would it be? Like someone who is like, I guess, like, I don't know, maybe the difference would be like a Tolkien nerd mm-hmm. is someone who like reads a lot and likes to like put together or, you know, like learn about the genealogies and stuff like that. Whereas uh-huh. like a Tolkien geek would be someone who like actually learns to speak Sylvan Orcish or write like one of the Tolkien languages or like actually makes genealogies of the characters or something like that. You can be both, I think.
Okay.
But you kind of bleed into that. Anyway.
I can buy that. Anyway, we're already 5 minutes into the episode, still talking about this stuff. If any of you are watching the YouTube video, there's a very large dog who's determined to be in our podcast today.
Yeah.
So you can tune in to the YouTube if you want to get a little glimpse of this very large but very cute dog. Let's just dive right in and talk about our sexualities. How do y'all feel about that?
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. We want to start that as the first topic here.
Okay. I'm going to start us off real poetic-like.
Cool.
If that's okay.
Yeah.
You do that.
So there is this queer theorist named David Halperin, who's done a lot of writing on this kind of stuff. And he has this great quote. Sex has no history because it's grounded in the functioning of the body. And he kind of distinguishes that sex itself doesn't have a history, but what does have a history, and therefore a lot of words and a lot of labels surrounding it, is sexuality, which is something that's a product of culture. Mm. So like our whole concept of sexuality is just this collection of meanings that human beings have attributed to sex acts and to the people that do them over the course of century, millennia, however long human beings have been having sex and had the wherewithal to comment on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Which I think is interesting to think about.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. And probably at one point or another, because I think that, I was watching Deadwood, and it's an HBO show, and like, you know, there are various people on the show that sleep together that are not, two women will sleep in the same bed together, and my partner was like, oh, well, that used to just be called, like, bedfellows. Like, this is my bedfellow, which didn't mean anything necessarily sexual, although potentially it could.
Well, that was something that I remember came up in Carrie Jenkins' book about, you know, before we labeled particular relationships as, like, lesbian, or before we attributed any form of homosexuality to women, like, that there are a lot of references within, like, for instance, like, Victorian era literature and journals of women who are very affectionate with each other, that we, with our modern day view, look at it and think of, like, oh, there's some kind of same-sex attraction going on.
Into each other,
or they must be into each other. And maybe they were, maybe they weren't. The thing is that there wasn't even a word.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't even in the vernacular to even acknowledge it or talk about it.
And well, and the ancient Greeks, right, did, like, the same thing. Isn't that the thing that people throw around all the time? Like, ancient Greeks would be interested in, or not necessarily like even interested in, but just like
they
sleep.
Would have sex. They would have like orgies and stuff like that,
and sleep with their apprentices or whatever,
right? Or your slaves, or of,
or your or your fellow soldiers, or whatever,
or the same sex. So, okay, why is it scary to label oneself? And like we've talked about this, we were laughing about this earlier. Like, okay, what labels do we use in order to, like, proclaim to the world what kind of people you prefer to have sex with?
Which is, like, kind of, it's really abstract and
ridiculous,
weird, absurd when you think about it that way.
Absolutely.
I don't know. Do you think that there's different types of people? I feel like I'm definitely the type of person where I feel more scared by attributing labels to myself, but I think there's other types of people who feel much more affirmed or excited by the idea of labels.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I think that can change depending on what time of life you're in.
What time of life you're in.
Well, okay, I just think about, this is really ridiculous, but I think back to, like, middle school and high school when we're all trying to figure out our identity and who we are and what kind of person we are. That's all very much in a state of flux. I remember there were always, like, my friends who would just really cling to labels really quickly. Mm-hmm. And even little silly labels like, oh, I'm a surfer, I'm a skater. I'm a punk rocker, I'm a goth, you know, but we're super excited by that because it was kind of this idea of it's community and it's belonging and it's a way that I can project to the world and let the world know how they're supposed to treat me or how they're supposed to see me.
Sure.
And I was never that type of kid. I was much more like, I don't think I qualify for these things.
What, you never were like a nerd or something?
No, sure. Like, sure, I was nerdy and I was into some punk rock stuff and, like, maybe some goth stuff,
really?
But maybe
some punk
but
rock
never,
stuff.
Never, like, okay, to give a very long, circuitous answer to why is it scary to label oneself, I think going back to even when I was young, it was kind of this idea of, like, if I adopt this label, that means I'm committed and I'll have to live up to it. Mm. I'll have to dress for it. I'll have to, like, I need to make sure that I'm living up to this label. And not being sure that I could do that, even if the label was maybe appealing to me.
It's interesting because I feel like I actually kind of have come at it from a different side in my life, where more of the fear of labeling myself is that I'm not necessarily sure I want to be involved with everything that's part of that label.
Hmm.
Like if the other people using this label start doing these things, like I don't necessarily want to be grouped in with them. You know, it's like kind of almost the same thing, but from the other side, if like they're the ones fucking it up versus like I'm the one who might fuck it up. I don't know.
Well, okay, what kind of label falls under that?
Oh, literally anything.
Okay.
Like we've talked about.
Oh, it's how I feel about polyamory many times.
Absolutely.
And you've talked about that. Yeah.
That I found myself unconsciously at first using that word to describe myself less and less, even though I very much resonate with it and feel like it's actually probably the most appropriate label I have. But I think because as media coverage of polyamory has expanded and I've just seen more of these like, oh God, like really embarrassing or not well handled coverage or just really bad examples or just when I see what people like when I say the word polyamory and people are like, oh, what, like sister wives? I'm just like,
we're gonna get into that a little bit later more, but
Well, I was just gonna say, like, with that label thing, so I was interviewed recently by Kat Black for her YouTube show, and the topic was relationship anarchy. And she reached out to her audience through Twitter or whatever and said, hey, I'm going to have a guest on to talk about relationship anarchy. What kind of questions would you want to ask him? And she said, like, one of the questions that came up, or some variant of it came up quite a bit, was like, ask him why he's such an asshole. And I was just like,
wait, what?
Huh? Yeah, right.
What does that even mean?
Well, what she explained to me based on her own experience and also the experience of a lot of her listeners who tend to be women, her audience is mostly women, that they've had the experience of men abusing the label of relationship anarchy to just be like, I don't want to be accountable for anything or responsible for anything. Yeah.
No, I've definitely encountered people that way.
And I feel like people do, we've talked about it before on this show long ago, but people do the same thing with polyamory of like, oh, it's just, well, I can adopt this label, but really it's just an excuse to do whatever the fuck I want and not really care about anyone else.
And it's not even necessarily a conscious thing that they're doing that. I think sometimes it's kind of like the label goes through the shredder of someone else's interpretation.
Right.
You know what it means sometimes.
Absolutely. And then also just like the stigma that comes along with that label as well.
Yeah.
Because again, I, for a very, very long time, was very scared of calling myself bisexual. Just simply, and I think, again, like you said, because of all the reasons why people will look at that and say like, okay, well, you're actually maybe just on one side of the fence or another. Mm-hmm. Or if I'm in a, you know, monogamous relationship with a male partner, then you're not actually bisexual. Like that idea.
Yes.
Or that, you know, it, with men, when they are bisexual and say, you know, proclaim to the world, I am bisexual, oftentimes they will just hear, no, actually you're gay, or actually you're just waiting to be, you know, to actually come out as really gay. Like you're in this holding pattern or whatever until then. And I think it's really difficult to put yourself to be in that situation and instead just be like, well, I'm sexually fluid or I'm something else, because that is a little bit easier of a thing for people to swallow.
Yeah, and it's so interesting you bring that up. I feel like, at least in my experience of being on the internet and in culture, that I'm starting to see more people. First of all, I mean, I feel like, you know, the concept of bi erasure has been in the conversation recently. But now I'm starting to see kind of more people talking about the facet of bi erasure that is like the erasure specifically of by people who are in a heterosexual seeming relationship.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and specifically, especially like women who are bisexual or pansexual, just basically non-straight women who are in a straight looking relationship. And how do we talk about those people? How do we, how are those people talked about? How are those people handled? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, all those kind of things. And I think that's really interesting and really good that that's starting to become a topic of conversation of like, yeah, this is kind of like just another level of erasure that happens is when someone who does say, yeah, I'm bi or I'm pan or I'm non-straight in some kind of way, but it's like, yeah, but you're in a relationship with someone who's...
Yeah. And I think it can feel threatening to a number of people for whatever reason, even just the idea that like, well, okay, I might get into a relationship with you and I am a straight male and you're, you know, a bisexual female, but what does that mean for the potential of like what you're going to be interested in? Mm-hmm. And I've definitely heard people kind of throw that out there. Like, am I always going to have to be looking around my shoulder of like people, you know, not just men, but also women or also anyone else, if right. you're pansexual or whatever, that just everyone's going to be my potential competition.
It's like that meme that I saw floating around recently, you know, that kind of takes pot shots at this idea that, you know, men and women can never be friends, or you can never be friends with like the gender that you're attracted to. And of course, people being like, well, what about bisexual or pansexual people?
Yeah,
and someone
just
responded
like,
being like,
friends at all.
Bisexual people don't have friends. They only have prey.
I take offense to that. That's
well,
fucking
it was,
bullshit.
I mean, it was joking, jokingly said, but
yeah.
But
that is
kind
of how people look at it though.
Yeah, I think that they can. Yeah.
Well, cause I think the whole question is, like this thing of your sexuality, of like wanting to know whether someone else is gay or straight, that we often will ask that question of people, even if we're not necessarily interested in them mm-hmm. or we're not even at the point where we're like wanting to flirt with this thing. But it's just like we think, oh, if I know that, then I know how I should act toward them.
Yeah.
And it's like, basically it's like, are you someone who I think might have sex with me or not? Because I need to know that because it's going to change how I behave around you completely. And that in itself is weird.
Well,
that's buck wild.
Like, it is, yeah. And just the audacity for like people in general just to be like, well, you know, bisexual people or pansexual people are just attracted to everyone because obviously they're not going to be. And
right.
yeah, just that assumption outright that, you know, they can't be friends with anyone because they're just going to be attracted to everyone and therefore they can't truly be friends with them is bullshit.
So can I share some interesting stits and stats?
Please.
Always.
But, actually, Emily, this was in one of the articles that you looked up
yes.
In preparing for this one. So this was from a couple studies, surveys, you should call them really, by YouGov, which I don't know if, are you familiar with YouGov? They're this site that does surveys and stuff and they just do gazillions of them.
Is it a government thing?
No.
Yeah.
Why does it call itself YouGov then?
I don't know where the name comes from actually. but they've been around for a long time. And what they have going for them is they tend to get very big numbers for their surveys.
Right.
These are not they're not like peer-reviewed, anyone can put their thing up on there and like mm-hmm. pay money for them to get participants.
But it's
for
like
it.
They get the very large sample size.
But they
responding.
Get you the sample sizes, okay. yeah. So they did these questions both in the UK and in the US where they were asking adults to rate their sexuality on the Kinsey scale, which is from 0 to 6, where 0 is completely heterosexual, 6 is completely homosexual, and then obviously in between that is somewhere in between. And what was interesting about it is when you look at, they broke it out by age group. So like, for example, in the US and in the UK, in the like 65, 60 plus, they did slightly different age groups in each area. Mm-hmm. So they're not a one-to-one match, but only 7% identified as anything that wasn't completely 0 or completely 6.
Interesting.
Only 7%, right? So a very
okay,
small
so
number
identified totally on the extremes.
7% were in the middle.
Oh.
93%
really?
Were one extreme or the other.
Really?
So this is people over 60, 65.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Got it.
And then as you go down the like 45, 40-ish to 65 range, similar. Like it comes up to, I guess in the US was 8 and in the UK was 16% were somewhere in the middle. But again, mostly polarized on the sides. Now, if we jump down to the 18 to 24 in the UK, 43% identify somewhere in the middle. That's not
that's
totally
close to half.
All the
yeah.
way. Close to half. Exactly. Yeah. And what's interesting about that too, is that remaining number, Well, I guess here they maybe had some people who didn't answer because these numbers don't add up to 100.
Yeah.
But 52% were either completely gay or completely straight, self-identified, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this isn't even saying like 52% straight. This is 52% gay or straight.
Yeah.
43%
somewhere
not
in the
quite 100% in the middle
either, yeah.
from how they self-identify. In the US, interestingly, a lower percentage. We had only 29% who identified somewhere in the middle, but the age range was 18 to 30 as opposed to 18 to 24, which I actually think I would bet that even skews it a little further.
Probably.
And that we have more hangups here probably, but
I was like, it's just a more puritanical society. Yeah.
Well, I think it is interesting that it's, you know, I mean, clearly there's a generational thing going on where we've seen, thankfully, a rise in acceptance of not only just not being straight, but also not being either extreme necessarily, even putting them as extremes on like, as though they're on the side of a scale. I'm like, I don't even know if I really agree with that.
Sure.
You know, clearly with more acceptance and with people feeling safer to acknowledge like, oh yeah, like there is maybe contradiction or just a multitude of ways that I feel in different situations toward different people as far as when it comes to things like sex or attraction or things like that, that people are more, I guess, more able and willing to affirm that. However, it feels like language-wise and label-wise, we haven't caught up to that necessarily.
But I think this study shows good evidence for why younger people are more hesitant to use labels than maybe people were in the past, is because it's like, well, they also just don't apply as well. And it's just, it's, I guess it's just interesting though to see that even in a situation like this where you're not asking like what percentage of people identify with labels, because you could make the argument like, oh, well, young people just don't like labels as much. But it's like, no, this is actually about like their attraction and seeing that that's also coming toward the middle.
Right.
And it's that chicken or egg question of like, are we less into labels because they just don't apply as well? Or because we're less into labels, are we able to see more of this middle ground?
Interesting. Yeah. Well, we're supposed to move on from this section, but quick lightning round. If you had to use a label to describe your sexuality, what would it be?
Use bisexual for sure. And I'm committed to that label now.
Okay, you're committed to...
Yes.
Is that your final answer?
Yes. Even my mother, like, when one of the first, like, openly bisexual senators was elected in Arizona, she was, like, all excited to tell me about it.
Aww,
which I thought was super adorable.
That's really sweet.
And I was like, thank you for acknowledging me.
Aww. I stayed with a couch surfer host in Rome. And he was this great guy.
Was that before you went to Shanghai? Or
it was
no way?
Way before Shanghai. So it was when I first left to travel.
Then.
Great guy. You know, it was like, he was so stereotypical Italian, like literally drove me around Rome on like the back of his Vespa and had this really thick Italian accent. And we had a great time.
That sounds awesome.
What a wonderful time. Anyway, but we were talking about a lot of stuff and he talked about his ex-girlfriend and he was like, yes, my ex-girlfriend was a bee. And so we realized that like maybe that couldn't work out for the relationship, and I was just like, a bee, she was a bee, what, a bee? And then he started to describe it. It was like, oh, she was bi.
Was she black and yellow and had a stinger
and maybe a little fuzzy? So I think of that now when people identify as bi. I'm like, oh, you're a bee. You're a little bee flitting around.
That's adorable.
Yes. A honeybee.
Jace, your turn.
Gosh. When push comes to shove, I tend to go with pansexual. That's kind of the one I've come to, even though I will avoid using it at all costs to describe myself most of the time.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same. I definitely land, I feel like, pretty firmly as far as if I have to choose a label, pretty firmly in the pansexual camp, but I'm scared of it. Because the thing is that it's like the label is a Pandora's box for me. Is that to then explain the labels, then I have to be like, well, my experience is mostly dating these kind of people, but then I find myself like really attracted to these kind of people. But then like with these kind of people, it's kind of more of like a demi-romantic, demisexual kind of thing. But then I thought that I was this way. And then I saw this really hot person one day and I was like, well, I guess I'm attracted to this kind of person also. And so for me, I've just kind of used pansexual as kind of like the catch-all of this is a much longer conversation and I'm still figuring it out. And even at the age of 31, I'm still learning about my sexuality. And it's scary, but also exciting.
Can my sexuality just be Eva Green?
You're just Eva Green sexual?
Eva sexual, yeah.
Green sexual.
There you go.
Oh.
Green sexual. See, that to me invokes ideas of like you're just really like turned on by nature.
That's ecosexual. That's the thing.
So green sexual.
Have you ever been out in nature while on a hallucinogen. Yes, you guys have. Or you all, rather.
Okay, I'm going to just hop us straight back in with the hard-hitting questions again. We'll kind of do this in reverse order. Okay. Let's talk about labeling gender.
Okay.
What do y'all think about what label you would use for your own gender identity?
Why'd you get all quiet when you asked that?
Like, I'm just trying to intimate
okay,
mood.
Okay.
You know, I don't want to make this into like a quiz show or something tawdry like that.
Got
not
it.
Not like the last section was.
I would label myself she, her pronouns. Mm-hmm.
But like as a woman, like cisgender?
Cisgender.
Yeah, I mean, gosh, I want to like get right into the discussion. I mean, I use, you know, male pronouns, mm-hmm. and I use male, you know, man, masculine, whatever to define me. I do like to say that I like to hold on to those labels loosely, as opposed to like a lifeline.
Mm.
And actually,
hold on loosely.
This is, it was something that came up actually in conversation on, Billy Procida's show, and he had me on his show on the Man Whore podcast, and he was kind of asking me about gender and my identity and stuff, kind of from a place as a guy being sort of afraid of losing his labels of being like heterosexual or being masculine or being a man or something, of like kind of holding on to those tightly and being afraid.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't quite say this as simply then, we talked about it a little bit more, but I kind of wanted to be like, if you just like loosen up your grip and let go of those things a bit, it's so freeing. I really recommend it.
Interesting.
But yeah. What about you, Dedeker?
Oh gosh. I don't know. I think about this a lot, honestly.
Really? Mm-hmm. This one in particular, interesting.
I guess I feel most, I don't know. Honestly, when I think about it, I just start to like spiral myself up into like all this self-doubt, because I think most of the time I feel pretty good. Like, I don't have a sense of like dysphoria necessarily. Mm-hmm. I don't have a sense of being frustrated with like the, you know, what was assigned to me at birth. And there are definitely some days where I feel pretty affirmed and pretty good in like, yeah, sure, like cisgender lady, mm-hmm. that's me. But there are other times where I feel really drawn to the idea of being more fluid and a little more non-binary. I mm-hmm. think I've sometimes struggle with that, and sometimes like again I just kind of spiral myself and like just have way too many thoughts about it, because I think, and I've also seen people online talking about this as well, that sometimes I struggle under this idea of like, well, to be non-binary you gotta change your whole look, you know, like I'm not nearly androgynous enough to identify as non-binary or to even flirt with that. And I know that that's not true, like it really doesn't matter, you know. I mean, it matters for some people, but I know for me, I'm like, well, whatever. Like, I know that I can feel the way that I feel, and I don't have to like try to like totally change how, you know, the way that I dress or the hair that I have or the makeup that I do that I feel comfortable with now. But that is just a weird thing that I tend to get hung up on, is like times that I feel like I would love to kind of stray outside of feeling just so dang cisgender all the time, because I don't know if it serves me 100% of the time, but then I feel a little bit trapped sometimes of like, but it feels like my avenues for that feel kind of all or nothing, which may be just something that I'm projecting onto it entirely. I don't know. Sorry. That was like a bunch of like word vomit.
No, I mean, that's
the
really
best way I can explain it. Like I can't. Yeah, that's where I'm at.
I definitely haven't personally like it labeled myself as anything but like she, her, cisgender, simply because I don't want to misrepresent like what people who are non-binary go through and the challenges that they face regarding that. Because I think most people, when they look at me, will see me as, you know, automatically like, that's a person who is a woman, and I say that I am
she,
her.
Lady.
Exactly. Now, the difference with me specifically is that when I open my mouth, something else entirely happens. And that's kind of been the way that I've gone through life since I was 13 years old, so much that I often, many times, get asked if I am transgender. And also, I mean, I've had, you know, in a much worse way, I've had men usually ask me if I was born male, or if I am male, but, you know, look like I'm not, or whatever. And this, again, like, I don't want to put out there that that is a difficult thing, because honestly, it's not. It's just it's a thing like, no, this isn't the case. You know, you are incorrect, person. But I do, it does put me in a situation of often being like, I embrace the side of me that is in many ways like the masculine energy, mm-hmm. because I think that, you know, my mother, I grew up around my mother who has so much of both masculine and feminine energy. And I think that's something that a lot of like woo-woo, like people tend to talk about
I know,
more now.
Yeah. Right.
But I think that there is a lot to be said for that. And in that way, I mean, I feel empowered sometimes in, you know, wearing a pantsuit and feeling really, you know, badass in a way that maybe I wouldn't in a dress, for example. Hmm. Now, other people might have the experience of feeling really empowered in a piece of clothing that they maybe didn't used to feel as though they could wear, kind of thing. Hmm. So I don't know.
I mean, I do think it is interesting just in your experience,
yeah.
just the way that your body is and mm-hmm. like your vocal cords are, that it does.
They're very different.
It just forces you to confront that. More regularly, yeah. confront people's perceptions,
yes.
you know, more regularly. And like, I think really serves as a reminder of like, wow, this is all based on these constructed perceptions.
Absolutely.
You know?
I mean, yeah, reading that Buddhist book uh-huh. as well that you had uh-huh. us read, I thought was really interesting because like life in general, so many times is our perception mm. and not reality.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes for so many things. It goes for this question in general.
Right.
And yeah. that we can never like truly know, I think, unless we ask. And mm-hmm. there's a difference in asking rather than just automatically assuming and then being told that you're incorrect.
Mm, right. Yeah.
And I think that that's hopefully where the narrative is starting to go
yeah.
as opposed to just assuming being the first course of action.
Yeah.
For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.
For a long time now, we've been fans of AdamandEve.com for getting sex toys or lingerie or accessories, things like that. It's just a fantastic resource with a huge selection. And now, not only do we have a fantastic offer, but we also have a promo code that will work on AdamMale.com and EvesToys.com, which are their sites specifically for LGBTQ audiences. And our code is fantastic. It's 50% off of almost any item in the store, and free discreet shipping when you use our code MULTI.
Yes, we love AdamandEve.com and have for years. They are our oldest and longest sponsor, and they just keep on giving great gifts to us and to our listeners. You can bring more pleasure and satisfaction into your bedroom by going to AdamandEve.com, AdamMale.com, or EvesToys.com and select any one item. It can be, you know, an adventurous new toy or anything you desire, something fun, something sexy, whatever sounds good.
So just enter offer code MULTI at checkout and you'll get 50% off almost any item plus free shipping. That's MULTI, MULTI at AdamandEve.com, AdamMale.com, or EvesToys.com. This is an exclusive offer that is specific to this podcast, and it's better than any offer that is currently available on their site. So again, use code MULTI to get you not just the 50% discount, but also the 100% free shipping. Code MULTI. Let me drop something else in there.
Please.
Other questions that I've had around when I think about my own gender identity is sometimes I've also talked myself into some weird places of wondering, do I have a desire to start leaning more masculine sometimes, or kind of more non-binary, because that's how I feel, or because it's appealing to think about getting access to more male privilege.
I freaking
sometimes
hear
you. That's been like, because I think that women already, especially, you know, cisgender women already get this message of like, you need to adopt male traits
and
in order to be successful,
yeah.
like assertiveness or aggressiveness or confidence or a lack of apologizing or whatever it is. It's like, we're already told that. And so sometimes I'm like, but gosh, is that wrapped up in that of this idea? Like, you know, so these are the kind of things where it's like, because I love and hate to think about these things so much that I end up in these weird places where I could never feel like I can land on solid ground as far as it relates to me.
Can I ask you something, Jace? Because I've definitely heard that exact same thing said from the other perspective.
Really?
Yes. That like, there's privilege and a lot of like amazing things that come with being a woman that men don't automatically get just from being men. And I don't know. And that access to that in a way. And I think that, Jace, we've had some conversations about this loosely, just that like, you know, there are moments where I feel like I've heard you say, like, I want to be construed as pretty or whatever, like in this way. And that like women might automatically, like, that might be a trait that they are thought of, perhaps, whereas a guy, that might not be the first thing that comes to mind.
Well, it's kind of what we got into a little bit on the episode where we talked with Cosmo Means and Melissa Mango about receiving healthy objectification from your partner, that it's something that women tend to receive a lot and men don't tend to receive very much at all.
I feel like, I mean, I'm sure this is different for different men who feel that way, but I feel like some of the desire I could also see for letting go of the male identity and kind of envying what being female has is, I would almost say, more that there's in some ways more flexibility in how you're allowed to behave. As opposed to men who tend to enforce upon each other a very kind of strict, limited set of what behavior is acceptable.
Yeah, there definitely
in
is
certain
that,
ways. In certain ways.
But one of the benefits, I think, of all the different feminist movements has been expanding the channel and expanding the options of like what you can be, and also while you're also a woman, and different ways of being female or feminine, and that for specifically cisgender men, that's less of an option.
There hasn't been as much of a movement to broaden that, what being that, a man means, whereas there has been a very concerted effort to try to broaden what being a woman means.
That's very interesting.
I wanted to talk briefly about using cis when describing yourself. And this is something that someone brought up for the first time in our patron group, in the Facebook group. I think it was probably now a couple of years ago. But kind of bringing up that when people in their self-introduction say, like, I'm a cis man or a cis woman, they ask the question of like, why are you specifying cis? Because what it seems like is you want to be sure everyone knows that you're really this and you're not one of those fake ones. And they didn't say these words. They were much more diplomatic about this, but I feel like that's kind of what they were getting at, was this
really
idea of like, and it was interesting because at the time I hadn't considered that way of looking at it. And I saw it more like, oh, well, by acknowledging cisgender is
acknowledging privilege in a way.
Well, is acknowledging the fact that there are other things and that this is a label worth like knowing about, I guess. But I actually, after hearing that, I was like, no, actually, this makes a lot of sense that for cisgender people to like latch onto and use cisgender for themselves is kind of in a way like trying to be like, no, I want to hold on to this privilege.
And
in itself is again like othering people. It's like, no, it doesn't matter if I'm cis or not. What matters is just what my gender is and what pronouns I tell you to use.
Well, I think it may depend on context in talking about these things.
Okay. How so?
Because I don't think it means it's like never use cis to describe yourself. You know,
I might go that far.
Really?
To be honest. Yeah.
Well, because I think, for instance,
if I'm talking about my access to privilege,
I'm going to acknowledge I have privilege as a cisgender person.
Sure.
Right.
I guess we'll see where that identity goes in the future. But but as for it is for now, it's like I have access to privilege as a cis person, you know?
Sure, and so that's true.
Like, but I understand also in other contexts, I think that makes sense of kind of being like, yes, I want to hang on to this and make sure that people know that I'm a quote unquote like real man or woman.
Right.
And I think it can also be something of, depending on the context, you can also be setting up an expectation of like, well, if I'm indicating that I'm cis, I expect a trans person to indicate that they're trans.
Yeah. Right.
And that can be a problem.
Absolutely.
Depending on the situation.
Yeah.
I just wanted to acknowledge that like language can be really challenging for those who want to start steering in the direction of being or if having language be more non-gendered, because we in our, I think, like just commonplace terms are thrown around like guys or like, hey, man, or like dude or whatever along those lines. And I know for myself, like those are things that I say on a regular basis. And this show has actually been a really great place for us to work on taking that out of the equation. Because I think even if it's easy for us to just slip into that, it can minimize those who feel hurt or personally like maybe attacked by those
words. Or who
words.
Just feel left out by those words.
Yeah, absolutely. Any of the above. And I know like it's a teachable moment whenever we hear about it from people who listen to this podcast to remind us like that that's a thing that we should at least be aware of. But it's difficult for sure. Like it can be. And that's something for me absolutely to continue working on, even just in my daily life, to like practice getting out of the habit of saying those words and those gendered things.
So we were reading this article before this that was talking about tips for how to get more used to using different gender pronouns when a loved one tells you that, you know, they tell you what their gender pronouns are and it's something different than what you've been used to. It's something different than what you've been using. And one of the things that this article recommended was practicing with a friend, which I thought was really interesting. It's saying find another person who is a friend or another loved one of this person and just like be really honest with each other about like, let's practice talking about this person using the correct pronouns to just get in the habit of it. I thought that one was really interesting.
Yeah.
But another one that I thought was particularly good was it talked about learning to pause slightly before responding in conversation. And as a little footnote, it was like, this is actually a good thing to just do in general.
Yeah. Don't just like, don't be reactive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then related to that was to kind of be aware, are there certain phrases or situations where I tend to mess this up more often?
Yeah.
And often it will be things that are just stuff you're very used to saying, or those times when you're you're not thinking so much about what you're going to say and you're just blabbing it out.
Totally.
And that one I was like, yeah, absolutely, 100%. It's like I'll be great about someone's pronouns and then in that moment where I'm just like in the heat of conversation, bam, 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 not pausing and actually thinking about what I say, that's when I'll fuck it up. And I won't even realize it until later or until it gets pointed out to me. And then I'm like, yeah, you're right. And so in this case, it recommended like, if you can identify what those things are, practice those things, practice different phrases, different things. And I think that comes from learning how to pause a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I know that we all have tried to do while we're recording this show, at least, is to just like have that little bit of mental pause to just evaluate, like, am I saying guys, you know, am I saying dude, or like, yeah, man, when I don't mean to, to try to get better about that. But
do it in real life too.
But it's definitely challenging, but I think those tips.
I think we've shared this on the show before. A really great analogy that I read that helped me to really reframe kind of the appropriate way to respond when you do make a mistake with someone's pronouns is, or if someone's pointed out to you, oh, actually this person is this pronoun, or, and it doesn't even have to be pronouns. It could be, oh, it's, you know, it's better to use this word rather than this word or this, or whatever it is, that it's like, treat it as though a friend is like, hey, you have something in your teeth, by the way. And you're just like, oh, okay, I'll fix that. And then you fix it. And then you're like, okay. And then we get back to our day.
Thank you for telling me.
You know, like it's worse if you like break down crying and you're super embarrassed. You're like, oh my God, oh my God, I can't believe it. You're like, it's yeah, just worse for
like,
everyone.
Whoa, you're just
or
like making this about you,
you
right
get
now.
Mad, mm-hmm. Or if you deny that, you're like, no, I don't have something in my teeth. You yeah. know, yeah. Yeah. Or like, are you with them? Like, no, no, what are you talking about? I don't have something in my teeth. So that was just, I don't remember who I got that analogy from, but I do remember when I heard it, I was like, oh, that makes so much sense to yeah. just kind of like in the moment, like you just roll with it. Cause it's like, honestly, we all get stuff stuck in our teeth sometimes.
Yeah. And I like that very much.
Yeah. You just yeah. gotta roll with it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, shall we move on to yeah. the last category here, which is labeling relationship styles,
which we kind of touched on a little bit before.
Yeah, at the very beginning we talked about that a little bit, about like, do you use the label relationship anarchist or polyamorous or monogamous or what?
We should go around at this point.
Oh dear.
Well, gosh. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Oh shoot. Oh dang it.
Do you, you didn't prepare an answer for this one?
Dang it. Okay.
We'll figure it out on the fly.
Yeah. Emily, do you want to start?
Yeah. Okay. I am currently monogamous. Mm-hmm. Yes. I'm in a monogamous relationship.
And I think that's an interesting distinction right
that
there.
Is,
well,
yes.
I think, yeah, I'm in a monogamous relationship and it's really hard to label like a just like thing because I've been polyamorous and I've been monogamous. I've been open. Mm-hmm. I've dated five people at once who right. were only vaguely aware of one another, mm-hmm. you know? And so, right.
well, it is kind of like
such an interesting question.
We are yeah. converging back on that same thing as with sexuality, mm-hmm. where it's, I think it's becoming harder to just extrapolate, oh, your relationship quote unquote orientation is just what you do.
Yeah.
I feel I because think, of the fact that we can have instances where people are much more fluid or like, you know, I know the new hot term from that blog post that was going around was like ambiambrous.
Ambiambrous.
Wow. Yeah. you know, but so I think it is harder to just be like, I'm a monogamous person. I'm a non-monogamous person.
But some people definitely do. A lot of people that we know will be like, well, I am inherently monogamous or I am inherently polyamorous or, you know, non-monogamous. Mm-hmm. But I think it's just really hard for me to go either place.
Right. Yeah.
Because I don't know what I am inherently am. I am the relationship structure that is, you know, going to be fulfilling for me at that point in time.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say non-monogamy made me, you know, open my eyes to a vast wealth of possibilities that wasn't ever right. a thing that I would have been, right. you know, around before or interested in before.
Well, and I think that's
before.
The same thing is that, again, we're becoming more cognizant of yeah. all the wide variety of options that we can have for relationships, but our language hasn't caught up to it yet because yeah. we're still calling it non-monogamy, for heaven's sake.
Exactly. Like, it's like monogamy or not.
It's, you know,
yeah.
and
one.
It's,
yeah.
it drives me up the wall sometimes when I even sit and think about it. I'm like, yeah. really, this is the best we got is just calling it yeah. non-monogamy
well, calling
or
it
ethical non-monogamy.
Not.
Like,
yeah.
can we not come up with a better word that's not just like polyamory relationship or whatever. Anyway,
well, what about
that's
y'all
a soapbox for another time.
Right, right.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I guess kind of like with Dedeker's question before of like, if I had to pick a label, the one I tend to gravitate toward more now is relationship anarchy.
Yeah.
However, I will try very hard to never use that label just by itself. Because I don't think it stands up on its own. I think it's a label that you need to explain.
Yeah.
At least I find I need to explain because of all the stuff we talked about before, right? Mm. Of either just a complete like, huh? Or just total misunderstanding of what it is by guessing from the words, which they imagine more like pipe bombs and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Or this, like, I've had really bad experiences with assholes using this term. And so, right. So kind of like, no matter which direction it goes, it's not going to be accurate. So yeah. I'll really only use it as a conversation starter to be like, let's talk about relationships and
yeah.
the different ways those can look.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Come up with anything yet?
Oh gosh. The weird thing is that, if I was under duress, I'd be like, my relationship orientation is that I am in a relationship with Jason with people. Alex. And like, that's,
right.
That's like all Done. I would say. I'm like, that's all I know. All I know is I'm in a relationship with these two wonderful people. And that's all I can tell
you.
Like, I'm sorry. Please stop asking me questions.
Yeah. I mean, again, like, I don't know, because I definitely won't prescribe to the idea that, like, which I think a lot of people will, that like their significant other is pretty much like the most important person on the planet. Mm-hmm. I think that my significant other is an incredibly important person in my life, but I also think there are a lot of other people in my life that are incredibly important.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, one does not trump necessarily the others.
Okay, so see, that's interesting. And I like using the term relationship anarchy, mm-hmm. but again, I will do the same thing and very rarely use it on its own. I mean, really, at the end of the day, I feel like my understanding of the label polyamory is more what resonates with me.
Mm-hmm.
But I tend to end up just giving this really long-winded explanation of like, well, I'm like non-monogamous and like, you know, polyamorous, but like kind of with relationship anarchy tendencies, but I don't know, you know?
But
part of it is also because I don't feel like I'm relationship anarchist enough.
Well, exactly. That's on all of these, though.
Right.
It's like, what is enough?
And then, of course, yeah. I have the question of, do I even want to be, quote unquote, relationship anarchist enough? Whatever that means.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And so exactly. I, again, think myself into this tizzy where I end up just getting frustrated and just being like, can't I just like have relationships that I want to have and no one asks me questions about what word I use for it, and just people leave me alone and let me be happy, please? Like, please, please.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I've also found for me, it's like, can I, with all of these, I guess, like, can I give you answers where like what you're really asking me and what I'm really saying doesn't just have to do with who I may or may not want to have sex with.
Yeah.
Like that's the thing I've recently, at least in my life, that's become the thing that's so tiring to me is like how much of this conversation is really just coming down to like,
who do you bang?
Might you want to have sex with me? Yes or no. What about these other sets of people? Yes or no. What are the rules around that? Would you want to, but can't, or can you? Right. It's like all about that, even though this is like considered normal, polite conversation for like the workplace. And when I started thinking about it that way, I was like, this is fucked up.
Yeah.
That we think these are like, that these are acceptable questions and conversations to be having in that sort of a professional environment. So,
I mean, kind of at the end of the day, yeah, like it's none of anybody's business unless we want to make it their business. I don't know.
Well, it reminds me, so someone on Instagram, so you know the Nathan Pyle comics, the one, The Strange World, about the aliens in human situations.
I think so.
You know, they've been super hot recently. Someone made a parody comic called The Straight World, which is about these aliens where one of them's like, you know, there's these three aliens in the panel and two of them are holding hands. And the one who's separate is like, oh, I see that you are holding hands with someone who appears to be of the same gender as you. You must explain to me how you copulate right now. You know, like,
and it's
exactly what we do in these situations.
Yeah, that's kind well, of what we're saying. Yeah.
Yeah. I've definitely heard people in various blogs say that like they don't want to necessarily be associated with polyamory because a lot of people abuse that term. And I'm sure, but then it's like, well, what is open? What is non-monogamous?
Yes.
What is whatever?
Yeah.
And like, you know, this person at work that I, you know, saw the other day that was talking to me about the podcast, he was like, well, you know, I just realized right now that, like, that's what I am. I'm polyamorous. He's like, you know, because I have a relationship with my baby mama and then three other women. And, you know, I take care of all of them. I pay for all of them. And, you know, they're only with me. And I'm like, oh, okay. So it's like a one penis policy kind of situation that you've got going on. I'm like, I hope these people have autonomy from you and stuff. But to me, that's not polyamory either.
Right. And then that starts to get into this uncomfortable conversation around what is gatekeeping and what is not. Because I'm very much on the same page where I'm like, that doesn't look like ethical polyamory to me. I'm not comfortable associating with that. But at the same time, I mean, some people, I suppose, do enter such a dynamic willingly. in theory, and everyone's super happy about it. I don't know. I just know that, like, in groups that are mostly populated by unicorn hunters, like, the argument always is like, well, we just do polyamory different from you, and so you need to not be so judgmental just because our polyamory is different from you, which is like, okay, sure, I get your point, but I have many other arguments to make. But that's not what this is supposed to be about. Jace, please change the subject.
Well, I actually kind of want to just, like, pivot, actually, on this same question. So,
or Nickelback.
No, like, pivot on the same the same thing here. So this question of, well, I see other people doing this thing with a label, what's my response to it? And one response, and we've talked about this a little bit, is like, well, I'm going to not use that label anymore because I don't want to be associated with those people. Right.
Yeah.
The other side of it is this, like, well, no, I want to, like, I don't want to just, like, give up on this thing that was important to me at one time. Instead, I want to, like, really work to help still make this a good thing, which is maybe on the one hand could be called gatekeeping, but on the other hand could be called, like, no, I'm actually trying to, like, keep the integrity of this thing that was important to me. And to use an analogy, or not an analogy, but, like, to use an example from my own life, totally not connected to non-monogamy, is when I was in college and was Christian and was still thinking about going into seminary and becoming a pastor.
How the mighty have fallen.
Well, that for me at the time, my approach was, you know, like, I'm a Christian, but I see Christians out there doing terrible things and saying terrible things and being very exclusionary and being very hateful and what have you. And my reaction was, I want to be a force toward making Christianity be a better thing.
How'd that work out for you?
Well, I didn't end up doing it.
Here you are on a non-monogamy podcast.
Also, like, you know, a podcast about the Bible where we drink.
Coming back around. I'll be a pastor yet. No. but you know what I mean? Like, my approach at that time was like, I want to be a force to make more people who use this label be more in line with what I think is the good sides of this and less of the bad sides of this.
Yeah, that's fair.
Like, with polyamory, I see a similar thing where it's like, do I fight to try to make this thing better, or do I just kind of abandon it as a label for myself entirely? I don't know. And that's it's an ongoing debate.
I mean, I have days where I'm much more on that side of things of like, no, I'm just going to invest in education and being out and talking about my experience and showing people, you know, like, no, this is the way that I practice and this is my identity and this is what it means to me. But then, like, every couple of weeks or so, Google News feeds me some article about polyamory and I cringe preemptively. I cannot tell you, I cringe literally every day from the feed I get in Google. Preemptively cringy because it's just like a 90% chance that what's in that article is not going to make me happy. It's not going to make me feel like, oh, I'm so proud that I have this label and that these are the people I associate with. I'm just like, no. And that's sad. I mean, I don't want to feel cringy about that.
I think all three of us, when we started this podcast, really were like, we are polyamorous. Hear us roar.
We are poly and proud.
And yes, that was our thing. That was your
that
thing
was
on
thing.
Utopia.
Was freaking hashtag. I mean,
yeah,
you
hashtag
didn't, you didn't
poly
choose
and proud.
It, though. It was kind
no,
of
it was,
assigned
it
to
was
you.
Thrown at me.
Be that as it may.
But still, yeah.
I think you, like, you kind of still ran with it for a little while afterwards.
Oh, yeah. I think we all did for a while.
Yeah, but, you know, I find it very interesting that, like, as time goes on, we are looking at kind of not bigger picture stuff per se, but just like all avenues, and that they've led us to, you know, let's start talking about things that are just like, how do we do relationships better?
How do we be better
people? How do we, like, you know, not put ourselves in situations where we're talking about, you know, where we accidentally marginalize someone, where we, like, change our language and be better about that and be, like, better advocates and kinder people. I think that all is important in a way that maybe just, like, figuring out your label maybe doesn't matter in the same way that that does. It might not matter to some, it might definitely matter to some people, and being out and proud and stuff is really important to a lot of people, but I appreciate that, like, all of the above can be correct.
Yeah. Well, Dedeker, you were talking when we were getting ready to record about that Kimchi Cuddles strip that you saw.
Say that again.
There's this wonderful strip, and you'll just kind of have to Google it, but Kimchi Cuddles, who's pretty well known for doing a lot of comics that are, you know, polyamory and non-monogamy focused. They put out this comic where in the first panel, there's this person who has the sheet of paper that just like says label on it. And they're like really mad. They're like, oh, labels, like who needs them? I don't need this. They're so restrictive. And they crumple up the sheet of paper and throw it over their shoulder. Yeah. And they walk out of frame. And then a new person comes into frame, sees the crumpled piece of paper on the ground, picks it up, sees the label, and is like, oh my goodness, I'm so glad that I found this.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a really good way of highlighting, again, kind of this light side and dark side of labels, that on the one hand, they can be restrictive. They mm-hmm. can cause things like gatekeeping. You mm-hmm. know, you can have all this anxiety around measuring up or meeting the label or whether or not you qualify for the label. But then on the other hand, it can also be a source of great affirmation and yeah. validation and give you access to community. And at the end mm-hmm. of the day, just give you a linguistic shortcut.
Totally.
Yeah. You know, to help Absolutely. Convey who you are to people.
You're in a relationship with this dog right now.
Yeah, this dog is all up in my business.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Also, it's like for the people watching the YouTube video, Dedeker and I are sitting a ways apart from each other at 90 degrees at this
and
table.
The, yeah.
And in my image, you can see the dog's tail wagging. And in hers, you can see the dog's head.
The dog's
this
giant
is a very,
head.
Very large dog.
Yeah. For our lovely Instagram followers, I'll show you eventually.
Yeah.
On
we'll
Instagram
put some
when
pictures
this comes out. Yeah.
In our
Patreon group.
In our patron-only Discord, we have a whole channel
oh,
that's
yeah.
just fur buddies or
yeah.
fur babies.
Fur babies.
It's just pictures of people's animals or people with their animals. It's pretty wonderful.
Sweet.
So, yeah, I guess just kind of our takeaway for this is just kind of to be aware of these, that there is good uses of labels and not good uses of them, and to kind of explore what they are for you, but also be respectful of what they are for other people. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
Like what those could mean for other people, both in negative and positive ways.
Right. And so we'll just reaffirm what we've always said on Multiamory for a long time, which is that labels really, if you're going to use them, they should serve you. It shouldn't feel the other way around. Like you have this pressure to live up to this particular label. Mm. They're there to be something that's useful for you, that maybe makes your life a little bit easier, whether it makes it easier for you to find community or easier for you to explain to people, you know, how it is that you want to be treated or how it is that you want to be seen.
Yeah.
Yeah. And ultimately, at the end of the day, even if you use a label for your relationship or your gender or your sexual orientation, you're probably still going to have multiple conversations
oh for sure
to explain that or to clarify that, depending on the context and depending who you're talking to.
Yeah.
So we want to hear all about labels from all of you, and the best place to share your thoughts about this episode with other listeners is on this episode's discussion thread in our private Facebook group or Discord chat. You can get access to these groups and you can join our exclusive community by going to patreon.com/multiamory. In addition, you can share with us publicly on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. You can email us at info@multiamory.com. You can leave us a voicemail at 678-MULTI-05. Or you can leave us a voice message on Facebook. Multiamory is created and produced by Jace Lindgren, Emily Matlack, and me, Dedeker Winston. Our episodes are edited by Mauricio Balvanera. Our social media wizard is Will McMillan. Our production assistant is Nicole Samra. Our theme song is Forms I Know I Did by Josh and Anand from the Fractal Cave EP. Full transcript is available on this episode's page on multiamory.com.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.